Ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to forgive my voice this evening, and if you can't hear what I say, would you please ask me to speak a little louder? The subject of my talk tonight is really has been accepted by Charles Byrne for the Flying Saucer Review, and so you're getting part of it in advance, as it were. Some of it will not be published. It has been, excuse me if I read this, but it is part of the article as well. Don't mind, no, I can see all right here. It has been remarked by a growing number of researchers that apart from some very convincingly material UFOs operating within our atmosphere, for which there is no reason to think otherwise than that they originate from some source within our own physical universe, there are others which appear to be behaving very strangely indeed, and that only what I can describe as occurrences of a particularly odd nature are taking place, which strongly suggests the existence of a supernormal element connected with the phenomena. For a considerable number of years, I have read and thought about these offbeat cases with increasing interest, since there appear to be so many features in common with the occult and spiritualistic physical phenomena to which the Society of Psychical Research devote their attentions and to which I have spent nearly half a lifetime of deep examination. These similarities are so remarkable that after more than two decades of comparatively fruitless research into the UFO enigma, I feel that a new line of approach from the occult or paranormal standpoint might be found to be complementary to existing lines of research and to prove rewarding. It was with this idea in mind that the following notes have been compiled, emphasizing that they are in no way intended as a comprehensive study, merely as a preliminary introduction to a suggestive inquiry. Air Vice Marshal Sir Victor Goddard, in a talk some number of weeks ago, made an extremely significant remark. He said, "All experience is in the consciousness," and he postulated the possibility of achieving a shift in consciousness which would enable one to experience another level of being. He called it other space, other time, other space-time. Or if you like, an interdimensional state just as real within its own sphere of operation as our own normal consciousness is within its particular physical environment. As illustrations of extra-dimensional powers or energies operating or being utilized within our dimension, he referred to the diagnosis of illness at a distance, indirectly referring to the Delaware machine of diagnosis. I have no brief either for or against it, but it apparently works. Materialization and teleportation of objects, and the radiation or auric properties of the human body. He also brought into his talk an extraordinary experience of time shift which he himself had whilst flying a light plane just before the war over in very bad weather. He came out of the bad weather and crossed over a very primitive and disused airfield, or what he thought was a disused airfield. To his astonishment, he saw on the ground a number of machines that he was not familiar with personnel walking about dressed in yellow and nice bright new hangars. He couldn't make anything of this until some years later, after the war had well started, he happened to go there and it was exactly as he'd seen it whilst flying over it. It's interesting to speculate if the ground personnel at the time, his first time of flying over the airfield, had looked up and seen him, did they see a UFO? Still, He furthermore urged the formation of a department of metaphysical science to be set up within the framework of established science in order to examine these phenomena. As meta denotes speculative or abstract, I personally would prefer to call out physical science, which to my mind would more accurately describe its intended scope. Finally, he postulated by inference the existence of certain people having either unpredictably spasmodic or cultivated according to some exact technique the ability to become aware of and to function in fields of activity beyond the norm of human consciousness, or to consciously or unconsciously create conditions suitable for the manifestation of paranormal phenomena. For many years, I studied this subject very thoroughly indeed, and I think that there was hardly a phase of it that I missed, from the levitation and direct voice of Jack Webber, Colin Evans and others, to materializations, apples, teleportation of objects, passage of matter through matter, psychic photography and so on, of Mrs. Dean, the Faulkner brothers, Rudy Schneider, Maria Silbert, Mrs. Lily, Tara Bay, etc. Hauntings and particularly poltergeists interested me, and in this respect I came into touch with Harry Price on a number of occasions. It seems strange that the extraordinary quantity and diversity of the psychical phenomena which boomed during the 1920s and 1930s should be so rarely seen today, and I wonder what the real significance of this is. The sum of these experiences convinced me that a very considerable percentage of the phenomena that I had investigated owed their generation to energies either from some shadowy or from some bright region which existed beyond the normal framework of human physical experience, and that man himself had some, as yet unconscious, means within himself which could cause a breach in the barrier, or create a gateway, as it were, which would permit the life of these other worlds or other spaces to overflow into his. I have a shrewd suspicion that these gateways into this world exist apart from man's catalytic help. I hope to make a short reference to these later on. However, I was quite sure that in the future the evolution of established science would be toward some sort of hyperscience. It had to be. Such well-known people as Myers, Eddington, Sir Oliver Lodge, Professor Henry Sidgwick, Sir William Crookes, to mention only but a few, had attempted it, each in their own way, and failed to make much impression on established scientific circles, for whom this type of phenomena was irrational and, for some reason, anathema. The rudimentary techniques that they had for the investigation of such things were inadequate in any case. It was clear that to them all phenomena had to be rationalized and explained in terms of existing knowledge, and so no useful purpose would be served by their investigating. I think we've heard that let out clause before in the Condon report. This urge for research and to attempt to penetrate to the realms which were thought to exist behind and beyond physical manifestation has existed for countless centuries and is more usually referred to as occultism. Let us at this point clear up some very mistaken ideas as to what occultism really consists of. The unknown has always existed, and for us, relatively speaking, will always exist. Occultism, in spite of the absurdly ignorant popular and general conception of it, is nothing more nor less than a process of inquiry into the conditions and laws prevailing at other levels of matter or consciousness. Other space-time continua, to use a modern term, and their effects upon ourselves and our environment. Occult practice consists of pursuing an accredited and proven technique whereby one is trained to be actually conscious of and then to operate within these other continua. During this training, the conditions experienced are naturally strange and bewildering. Previous concepts need to be modified. Emotional blocks to new concepts have to be resolved, and old established shibboleths and prejudices have to be thrown over in order to achieve the elasticity of mental outlook and capacity for unbiased judgment which has to be attained if further intelligent progress is to be achieved. It is of interest to note here that some avant-garde scientists have gone to the extent of postulating other states of existence, or parallel universes, to account for certain observed anomalies, suggesting that penetration into other space-time continua is theoretically possible, but that the operative mechanics to achieve this are far and away beyond modern technological know-how, and will probably remain so for an extremely long time to come. These trading techniques can, in a way, be likened to psychoanalytical techniques of a hyperpsychological order, and consequently must be practiced under the supervision of a competent and qualified instructor, so that the well-being and protection of the novice can be maintained. For not only are the positive and higher orders of intelligences and powers encountered, but also those of the negative and lower orders. Since mankind is, generally speaking, largely negative in physical and moral fiber, it is this latter category that he is more prone to encounter. And without an authoritative training, lack of knowledge and the ability of true discrimination would almost inevitably lead him to eventual mental and moral disintegration. This is the danger which very much faces the lunatic fringe, UFO cults, who permit themselves to be taken over and be conditioned in a negative mediumistic fashion by bombastic and patronizing extraterrestrial masters whose vapid pontifications would merely be pathetically amusing if it were not for the fact that, without intelligent consideration or in any way being challenged, they are swallowed wholesale by their wishful thinking and gullible devotees. Occultism is not a game for little boys and girls, nor is it a subject for those with conditioned or preconceived ideas, nor is it a matter to be dabbled in by those who have filled themselves with a hodgepodge of superficial, contaminated, or popular occultism, nor for those whose imaginations and emotions are not to a great extent under very good control. It is a very serious and often a very dangerous subject psychologically to become involved in, and best avoided unless one's motives are healthy. In these extremely brief allusions to occultism, I have not even begun to lay bare the bones of so vast a subject as readers, as listeners in this case, must realize. If they wish to take the matter further, then they must be prepared to start from square one and undergo intensive study and training for a great number of years, provided, of course, they are fortunate enough to contact an authentic and qualified instructor in the subject. They may, of course, read up the subject thoroughly and come to no harm, provided they use plenty of common sense, maintain a liberal yet impartial and analytical attitude towards their studies, and be particularly on their guard towards those who make extravagant claims either to knowledge or to advanced spiritual attainment, and treat flattery with suspicion, and above all, keep a sense of humour. Now, I'm going to put, as it were, the cart before the horse here. Supposing that researchers into UFO phenomena do come up against cases which apparently, or they appear to have some sort of supernormal involvement, I have drawn out a certain suggested procedures. What has been said so far is with the idea of advising the researcher as to the type of field of inquiry he will be entering should he suspect or find himself involved with supernormal phenomena, either similar to or closely tied up with a UFO investigation. Finding himself in such a position and getting out of his depth, I can only suggest the following lines of action that he should take. A. Don't panic. Supernormal phenomena to the tarot can be very disturbing. Continue the inquiry in as positive, unemotional, and balanced, scientific a way as you can, but don't do it by yourself. Bring in others to help you. B. Make exceptionally careful and detailed notes in duplicate of every occurrence, no matter how absurd or weirdly improbable it may appear to be, passing one copy immediately to a responsible research organization. This is important, It's because sometimes people have the feeling that they should destroy their evidence. It's a very common thing that occurs. C. Don't go all mystical and sit in meditation or open your mind to the space people. You are not in a position to positively know what type of intelligence or energy may be seeking to invade your mind, and you may suffer disastrous harm in consequence of this practice, as has been only too apparent among some researchers in recent years. D. Don't call in a spiritualist medium unless advised to do so by a more knowledgeable person. I believe there to be very few capable of being of help in such situations, and they may cause more trouble than not. E. If the researcher finds himself or is found to be a natural sensitive, he should keep well clear of this type of investigation until he has sought advice and received protective training for his sensitivity. F. Don't court trouble. If in doubt, curtail the inquiry and place it in the hands of one more qualified in this field of research. One can think of a number of other useful lines of advice, but I think that covers most of the important ones. Now, the similarities in phenomena. Although there are a number of very much more subtle similarities, the following are good examples of the more striking ones. Should the researcher meet with any of these, particularly if there are several in conjunction, I suggest that he keeps the possibility of an occult undertone in mind and be on his guard. I have not made many references to actual cases in these similarities because researchers who are familiar with the history of sightings throughout the world will be able to pick out the ones that have any meaning in each particular case. A. Unpleasant and pungent odours. You also get pleasant odours as well, but more usually in the case of UFO phenomena, strangely enough, they are unpleasant. Sulphur, ozone, etc. associated with monsters, such as the Sutton Vancouver case. At UFO landing sites, or left by intruders in connection with UFO landings. These odours are also encountered in the sales room and at certain badly haunted localities. B. Fear of strong light. Some UFOs take violent avoiding action when beams of light are directed at them. Sales room and supernormal phenomena occur usually in the dark or with only a very dim or red light. Bright light appears to prohibit or limit materialization. Deliberately caused light failures in cars may have some connection here. It's worth keeping in mind. Precipitation. Angel hair, jelly, oily fluids, etc., which evaporate and disappear. Viscous precipitations and the feeling of hairs being drawn across the face are met with during the production of seance from materialization phenomena. Lowering of temperature. This has been noted with both types of phenomena and may be actual, that is, the temperature of the locality itself may drop, or it may be that the conditions present produce an apparent bodily feeling of cold due to nervous tension, etc. In the rare occasions when humans have deliberately walked through ghosts, a feeling of considerable cold has been felt. Voices heard in the mind or brain, usually referred to in contact cases. This could be telepathy, but it is very similar to the voices heard by clairaudience, or some clairaudience. Shadowy, quasi-solid and solid figures, walking about outside or inside houses, or suddenly appearing at night, give warnings or make pronouncements, etc., such as Mrs. Appleton and a variety of others that you can think of. Similar to seance room materializations, phantasms, apparitions, or just plain ghosts. Very similar. Teleportations, common to both fields of research. Mentioned two. There was the famous one from each side of the picture. There's the famous Mrs. Guppy case, in which Mrs. Guppy in London somewhere fell asleep in front of her fire, and the next thing she knew was that she'd woken up sitting on a table in the middle of a seance, some miles away. Teleportation. Then there's the doctor and Mrs. Vidal case of them being teleported in their car in 1968 from a town in Argentina to Mexico City. That's reported in full in Flying Saucer Review. Telekinesis, this is common to both fields of research. This is the movement of objects at a distance. Levitation of humans and objects is a well-known seance room phenomena. Jack Webber, Colin Evans, and many others produced it, both in broad daylight, practically broad light, rather, and also in the dark. Suggestive of UFO entities rising up into their craft, hovering above them, cars and other objects being lifted up and dropped, and the feeling that some observers have had of being drawn up or towards a UFO. Materialization. UFOs sometimes appear to materialize out of nothing and fade away into nothing again, similar to some reported supernormal phenomena. Spreading globes of light, noiseless and with noise, common to both fields of research. Sounds of explosions, bangs or raps, with apparently no visible or physical source, it is also common to both fields of research. Unaffected by physical forces or laws, UFO entities appear to be impervious to gunshot and immune from physical attack. At least many often do. I can't think of a case where one was actually injured, particularly in the Hopkinsville of Kentucky case in 1955. In addition, the cases of apparent interpenetration of matter by matter, such as re-entry of UFO entities through the seemingly solid walls of their craft, would suggest that we are dealing with another order of matter. In support of this are the strange cases of the Venezuelan hairy beings of such dense matter that knives were deflected from them and a gun butt shattered against them. Interpenetration of matter by matter is a seance room phenomenon. Maria Silbert, who I've sat with on a number of occasions in South Germany, was an excellent exponent of this art. And ghostly apparitions are unaffected by weaponry of any kind. Expansion and contraction of objects. UFOs have appeared as localized points of light and then grown into large, quasi-solid objects, only to shrink to pinpoints of light again and disappear. In seance room materialization phenomena, ectoplasmic faces or hands have been observed as being quite tiny and then to have grown to much larger proportions and later to shrinking away, rather like the blowing up of a balloon with a face painted on it and then letting the air out. Photography. Some psychic photographs showing globes of light and shadowy figures could well be mistaken for those which people have claimed as being of UFOs. Actually, they're almost identical. This, I consider to be a most perfect field for immediate research amongst those who are interested. It might be of interest to note here that some UFOs are able to be photographed and not observed. Observed and not able to be photographed, and that this might have some relation to the fact that some are detectable by radar but are unobservable, while others are observed which are undetectable by radar. Physical effects on humans. Prickling of scalp, tingling in hands and body, coldness, partial paralysis or rooted to the spot feeling of lightness and of being drawn towards or up to UFO or UFO beings, muscular and or mental tension, apprehension, feeling that something is going to happen, and the feeling of being taken over by some influence or forced into some involuntary action are all similar to effects experienced in relation to occult or supernormal manifestations. Sounds. It is a tradition in occultism that the sound of buzzing like a swarm of bees, humming noises, bell-like notes, a whine like a generator, indicate the advent of a teacher or higher intelligence, all remarkably suggestive of sounds that UFOs have been heard to emit. Poltergeist activity, noted in a number of cases after UFOs have been in close proximity, It is a matter of research, however, to determine whether the UFOs are directly responsible for producing this phenomena, or whether it is the effect of the UFOs upon a suitable human subject, who then becomes an unconscious source of energy for the production of this phenomena. There are other similarities, but I consider that those are the main ones. But as I hint, they can be added to almost ad infinitum. In the foregoing, I have listed only the principal phenomena which appear remarkable for their similarity and occurrence in both fields of research. These similarities may, of course, be rather in the nature of a red herring. I personally do not think so. There are too many of them to be mere coincidence. On the other hand, I am not saying that any of them cannot be interpreted within another framework of reference. As physical, rational phenomena, or in a psychological or time cycle context. I do suggest, however, that this particular line of inquiry should be considered seriously and explored by researchers who are qualified to do so. Now, further considerations, both physical, atmospheric, and sonic, in relation to sonic tensions. Earthquakes and tremors. It is now recognized that UFOs appear to have a close relationship to earthquakes and earth tremors. They have frequently been observed in the vicinity of such disturbances. Their apparent interest in geological fault lines was thought at one time to be associated with their possible magnetic drive. According to traditional occult teaching, earth faults set up stresses and distortions in the earth's etheric envelope, which create weak spots or gateways, as they were termed, through which other orders of matter from other levels were enabled to leak into or invade our space-time continuum. That is tradition. Atomic and thermonuclear explosions, similarly it is said that great atmospheric tensions and sound waves are capable of producing such weak spots. Atomic and thermonuclear devices are certainly capable of fulfilling these conditions, and for this reason might be considered as possibly contributory factors in explaining the proliferation of UFO phenomena since the war. Ball lightning. Meteorologists classify these as natural phenomena of an electrical nature. What little is known about them is mostly gained from observations of their behavior, but apart from that, what they think them actually to be is still purely theoretical. Their genesis occurs usually in conditions where high atmospheric pressures, electrical tensions, and loud explosions are to be found, namely thunderstorms. They can be hot or cold, they can disappear and reform, be of a variety of colors, they can give off trails of sparks, knock people out, kill people, pursue cars, make right-angle turns, attain high speed, in fact perform most of the maneuvers attributed to UFOs. They also show a strange sort of intelligence and produce effects similar to poltergeist phenomena. Some of you have heard, but some of you have not heard, this one of the favorite stories of Tony Dunham in regard to one of these lightning balls. Its entry into a, I think it was a farmhouse, generated, entered in some way down the chimney or through the window, went through the living room into the kitchen, where there happened to be a dresser with a number of plates on it. And it took down, without smashing, every other plate on that dresser. Seems rather strange. Shows a certain amount of intelligence. There are some allied subjects which I would recommend for research, for those who are interested. People have spoken to me about the possibility of using radiesthesia, so I made a few notes on this. Very little research that I'm aware of has been attempted in this field of analysis, and what has been done is by no means acceptable or conclusive. A brave attempt was made by the Metaphysical Research Group of Hastings some years ago, and published under the title Biometric Analysis of the Flying Saucer Photographs, the subject matter and investigation being the Adamski and the Steve and Derbyshire photographs. After pursuing numerous personal experiments, which produced, I admit, some very strange results, it became obvious to me that lack of suitable control samples when dealing with possible extraterrestrial phenomena could seriously limit investigation. Investigatory techniques in themselves proved to be very tricky to evolve, In any case, it would require a number of individual practitioners working on a coordinated project to produce an answer of statistical probability on every given aspect of the inquiry. In other words, should we employ an unproved to prove what is yet unprovable? Then there is the strange business of those who are interested in talking to those who are already interested in occultism, those students of the Kabbalah, which is the Hebrew metaphysical philosophy, one source which promises to provide most astonishing information on UFOs is Transcendental Kabbalism. This is a vast and highly complex system of cosmology, both physical and spiritual, which, together with its practical techniques, requires a lifetime of study and devotion. As research into this source from a ufological point of view is in its initial stages, I would have the listener fully to understand that the following descriptions of extraterrestrial beings or vehicles from other planets or their parallel universe equivalents, as they would appear to terrestrial man, to be a reasonably free interpretation and adaption to modern technological standards. From information provided by Kabbalistic records, extragalactic vehicles are seldom encountered on this Earth. But if they are, then they should appear as a formless radiance of brilliant light. If they come from our galaxy, they would appear very large, pearly, iridescent wheels or discs emitting a white radiant glow and bearing possibly red, blue and yellow flashing lights. All this I'm telling you can be checked up. Supposedly they come from Saturn or some parallel universe associated with that planet. They might well appear as very large, dark brown constructions, possibly of mothership or boxcar type. Also smaller grey metallic objects, and possibly the sculpture type, emitting a pink glow and red flashing light. They are associated with Jupiter. They would appear as brilliant white orbs of light, emitting a intense purple or deep violet glow from within or without, with blue and yellow flashing lights. If from Mars, fast, bright, scarlet red objects emitting fiery and smoky exhaust trails. If in the vicinity of the Sun, salmon pink glowing orbs with golden amber radiances. You've heard of all these descriptions. And if from Venus, golden or yellow green objects with green and white flashing lights. If from Mercury, smallish coppery red pulsating objects with yellow lights. If from the parallel universe or parallel condition to the moon, they would appear as dark purple and grey objects of unusual shapes, very unusual shapes, such as cones, tops, rods, cubes, etc., usually negative in character and can cause illusions, mental aberrations, apprehension and general discomfort. If they are purely associated with the Earth and its supposedly etheric side to the Earth's nature or the etheric world of the Earth, these objects, the objects whose descriptions are very similar to ball lightning, having primitive intelligence and impish habits. Considerably more research into the subject is demanded, and as practice is involved, this field of inquiry is not without its dangers. But it is remarkable, I've just made those observations just for the record, that there are such remarkable similarities that are on record and can be checked for researchers in regard to Kabbalism. I'd like to just touch on contact stories, a short statement on a subject which I consider should be separately dealt with at considerable length. Many contact events may well be the result of auto-induced or imposed hallucination. Some may be actual physical events within our own space-time, but some, I am sure, are a metaphysical experience at another level of consciousness. Many accounts by contactees are permeated by a definite dreamlike quality, which, in addition to anomalies of time lapse or time gain, are comparable to parapsychological events experienced by practicing occultists. One example, typical of such an event and remarkable for its similarity to contactee trip in space stories, is that told by the Comte de Saint-Germain in his rare work, Les Traits sans Trinosophie, manuscript number 2400 in the French Library at Troyes, published towards the end of the 18th century, of which the following is an extract. Scarcely had I risen to the surface of the earth when my unseen guide led me still more swiftly. The velocity with which we sped through space can be compared with naught but itself. In an instant I had lost sight of the plains below. I noticed with astonishment that I had emerged from the bowels of the earth, far above the country above Naples. A desert and some triangular masses were the only objects I could see. The earth seemed to me only a vague cloud. I had been lifted to a tremendous height. For quite a long time I rolled through space. Already the earth spread out before my confused vision. I could estimate how many minutes would pass until I would be crushed on the rocks. Finally, he raises me with him to an immeasurable distance. I saw globes revolve around me and earths gravitate at my feet. Suddenly, the genius who bore me touched my eyes and I swooned. There's somehow a very strong smack or flavor of the traveler in space contactee story about that. In conclusion, the astronomer Sir James Jeans, in his book Physics and Philosophy, says, "Our studies can never put us into contact with reality. We can never understand what events are until man becomes endowed with more senses than he at present possesses." The psychiatrist C.G. Jung, who was particularly concerned with the importance of the esoteric aspect of UFO phenomena, in his book Flying Saucers, says, "These rumors, or the possible physical existence of such objects, i.e. UFOs, seem to be so significant that I feel myself compelled to sound a note of warning. It is not presumption that drives me, but my conscience as a psychiatrist that bids me fulfill my duty and prepare those few who will hear me for coming events which are in accord with the end of an era. As we know from ancient Egyptian history, there are symptoms of psychic changes which always appear at the end of one Platonic month and at the beginning of another. They are, it seems, changes in the constellation of psychic dominance, of the archetypes, or gods, as they used to be called, which bring about or accompany long-lasting transformations of the collective psyche. I am, to be quite frank, concerned for all those who are caught unprepared by the events in question and disconcerted by their incomprehensible nature. Never before in recorded history has the planet Earth and its population had to bear such colossal impacts of sonic emission, both audible and inaudible, such fierce global mass emotional stresses, such violent atmospheric and terrestrially artificially produced tensions as it is borne over the last century. Although, by and large, moral and spiritual and emotional values appear to be in a state of decadence, technological evolution has been gigantic and bewildering enough to create the compost wherein other facets of human evolutionary growth may germinate. What are or will be the effects of these pressures on the mass human psyche? Will they initiate a breakthrough of human perception and awareness, a new turn in the spiral of human mental and psychic evolution, the opening up of vistas of horizons hitherto regarded as fantasy by scientific establishments? Only time will tell, but there is evidence to suggest that it is time we broke free from the fetters of the rational and the traditional and pondered on these things. Thank you.